Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune, Pastor Dusty White, and Chris Hemmelman of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down in our echo chamber to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're going to talk about the Kim Davis situation.
If you've been living under a rock, Kim Davis is a county clerk in Kentucky who has refused to issue marriage licenses and is also refusing to resign. This is an ongoing saga. By the time we put this podcast online, because we record it slightly in advance, the ground under this thing is constantly changing. But we want to just talk about it because it presents an interesting question of the Christian relationship to the state. So here's what happened. I a couple Sundays ago, read Rod Dreher's opinion on this, where he essentially says, hey, this isn't the hill we should be dying on. This isn't the fight that we want to have. There are bigger and more important fights that are going to come in the area of religious freedom. This isn't the one. I found his argument pretty compelling, thoughtful, especially from just a broader cultural perspective. And so I tweeted out something about it. And then somebody sent me, in response to that, an article from Douglas Wilson, which I later read and thought, ooh, he takes the exact opposite opinion and is very persuasive. And so I thought it was interesting, and we thought we'd talk about it here on the podcast, just because essentially the question here is, if I'm a Christian and I live in a country that has now called marriage, homosexual marriage, legal, what then are my responsibilities if I'm a public servant, if I'm in an office? For instance, as Kim Davis is, where she issues marriage licenses, and then how does a Christian conscience play out in a situation like that? So, long story short, Kim Davis refuses to issue marriage licenses because she didn't want to be accused of discrimination. She said, okay, I'm not just going to not issue homosexual marriage license. I'm not going to issue any at all. So she just stopped issuing licenses and refused to allow her clerks to issue any because they would have her name on them. And she took this stand as an issue of freedom of conscience. Now, here's the important thing. As from my distant understanding of Kim Davis as a person, I don't think she's like the most thoughtful Christian in the world. She's not a kind of person I'd want to be like, yes, this lady is the most salient representative of my point of view. So, but I think we need to separate her and how she holds her convictions from the question of what's the right conviction to have here and how should a Christian in this sort of position think through this. So guys, for the sake of this conversation, as it stands today, I kind of side with Douglas Wilson. Chris, I think you kind of side with Rod Dreher. And Dusty, I don't know where you are, so let's talk
it out. I'm just intrigued by Wilson, so I think he just makes my mind spin in good ways if I had to pick a decision.
Yeah, I like a lot of what Doug Wilson has to say. I just don't know if his argument is the right one to be making in a pluralistic society. He draws a lot from, not explicitly, but is drawing a lot from Calvin on this, and which we'll probably get into here. And the thing is, I think this is one of my kind of an overarching critique of this is Calvin's argument works really well in a culture that largely assumes Christianity. We're way past that. And so I just don't know if this still is an argument that is tenable. So,
all right, good. So fact of the matter, we live in a pluralistic society. We as Christians need to learn how to conduct ourselves in that kind of a society. We do need to live peaceably with those who disagree with us. We need to make social space for people who don't embrace our worldview. And so there's significance in that. I think, as you said, Chris, the historical circumstances are somewhat different. Let me frame out real quick the essence of Dreher's points and the essence of Wilson's points, and then we'll discuss them. Dreher is saying, this isn't the hill to die on because it's possible for Kim Davis to resign from her, to step out of her position and therefore not have a conflict of conscience. If she doesn't feel like she can issue these marriage licenses, she could step aside. Someone else could get elected to this post and do it. Therefore, there'd be no conflict. Dreher's saying, he asked this question, okay, if this isn't the hill to die on, what is, right? What is the religious liberty issue that we should be willing to go to the mat for in the current cultural context? And Dreher says, my answer is this. when they start trying to tell us how to run our own religious institutions, churches, schools, hospitals, and the like, and trying to close them or otherwise destroy them for refusing to accept LGBT ideology. This is a bright red line, and it's a fight in which we might yet win meaningful victories given the strong precedents in constitutional jurisprudence. Okay, so he's saying, basically, let's just be responsible for our own institutions, and if the government starts trying to intrude into that and tell you, hey, your church has to embrace LGBT ideology, that's where we just drop the religious freedom card and say no. And he's saying we have firm constitutional ground there and firm jurisprudence history there, and so we're in good company. We're on good territory. It's hard for me because as sort of a cultural observer, I tend to agree with Dreher, meaning we live in a highly post-Christian culture. We're past the day when we're going to win any arguments based on Christian worldview or morality. And I think, you know, Dreher's point of view basically combines with his idea of the Benedict option, which is we need to build our own institutions. We need to be responsible for them. And so let's just sort of not play the broader culture game, and let's just worry about our own institutions. Wilson's argument is, he's such a satirical and sarcastic writer that if you haven't read this article, the title of it on his blog is "In Which I Paint with Some Bright Yellows," and the whole thing is just sort of full of satire. And Wilson is a clever and brilliant man, and so his writing is very intriguing to read, even if you don't agree with his position. What he says is, the funny thing about hills to die on is they never quite look like hills to die on. When you actually get on them, they just look like normal hills. And so he basically says, he has this line in his post that says, retreat is habit forming. Like, if you keep retreating, you're never going to die on any hill, because once you get to the hill that you think is the hill to die on, it all of a sudden starts looking like maybe it's not the most important one. So he's pressing that, and he is working from Calvin's doctrine of the lesser magistrates, which is in book 4 of Calvin's Institutes, and a classic sort of treatment of how the Christian should relate to society and to the world and to politics. And Calvin says, if we are going to live as Christians in the world, we live with a Christian conscience, and that means we care about our society and we care about what other people are doing. Can we enforce Christian morality upon them? No. But when the society goes to the place where it is enforcing non-Christian morality, and where it's forcing people or allowing people to distinctly sin against God, then a magistrate, a Christian who's in a position of public authority, has a responsibility then to resist that. And the interesting thing about Kim Davis is she is not a hired official, she is an elected official. And so even if you think about American constitutional jurisprudence, she's in a position where if people wish she would get out of the way, the Kentucky state legislature would have to file impeachment charges against her and essentially impeach her from her position. And so she's saying, I'm going to stand on principle here because I want to, not only do I have a personal conviction, but I think it's wrong for Rowan County, Kentucky, to call gay marriage marriage. Wilson's really fascinating point he makes in his article is, if just 10 governors treated things the same way Kim Davis is treating it, this entire unrighteous and despotic imposition would collapse and fall to the ground. And if they did so, they would not be sinning against the United States. Rather, they would be preventing the United States from sinning. So he's saying, look, if 10 governors would take the same stance Kim Davis is taking, this whole thing would be back in play. And he's exactly right. The way the Constitution works, the Supreme Court renders decisions about what is legal and illegal, about how the Constitution connects to law, but it has no power to enforce its decisions. It is entirely in the executive branch, both at the federal level and at the state level, to actually enforce the decisions of the Supreme Court. And so if 10, 12, 15 state governors said, I don't care what the Supreme Court says, we're not marrying homosexual couples, this really would create the right kind of crisis in our country, where this would have to be decided in the legislature and at the ballot box and by popular opinion and by debate and discussion, and not by five guys in black robes rendering a verdict in the Supreme Court. So here's Wilson's compelling point. Some ask what the good in this might be. In other words, if everybody did what Kim Davis did, or if we just supported Kim Davis, what's the good in this? Wouldn't it just result in no Christians in these kinds of positions? Perhaps. But it would be far better to have godless results enforced by the godless than to insist that the godly do it for them. It would be far better to have the no Christians in power results when it was actually the case that no Christians were in power. I would rather have non-Christian clerks acting like non-Christian clerks than to have Christian clerks do it for them. And so the point he's pressing there is, fine, yeah, it might result in no Christians being in these kinds of positions, but that's better because then the non-Christians have to enforce non-Christian decisions instead of the Christians doing it for them. And I feel like that's a compelling point in his argument there, is to basically say, look, if you have a Christian and they're in power, the answer isn't just to say, well, move your conscience aside, too bad that you don't think this is what marriage should be. The Supreme Court said so, so just do it. He's saying, no, we're allowed to stand on principle. And if people want to impeach people who do that, throw them out of office and put somebody else in office who's a non-Christian, fine. But that's the right way for a Christian to go about it, is what he's saying. We should stand on principle in this and thereby force non-Christians to play the game and to confront that, rather than just to apply social pressure of like, well, is it really that big a deal? I don't know, guys. What I think what you find compelling about Wilson, Dusty, is I find him incredibly consistent with his own positions and courageous. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to, you know, back down and say, well, I mean, it's a pluralistic culture, so blah, blah, blah. He's just going to say, nope, if we're Christians, let's live out a Christian conviction, and here's what that would look like in this situation. So, sorry, kind of a long summary of the arguments, but that sort of puts us in play now to have the conversation.
That is exactly one of those lines that you read is exactly why I like Wilson's take on this whole thing, because he puts non-Christians and Christians into complete different categories. He also says early in that article that it's not just an issue of conscience, but basically if you're going to elect a Christian into office, let them be a Christian there with their own conscience. And so that's why Wilson's article is intriguing to me here on this whole thing. He also says, let the bad guys expose themselves. And I think one of the... and then I'll be done basically summarizing the entire article here on the podcast. But I think what's convicting about what he says here, Chris, I'm interested in your thoughts, is he says, evangelicals are sweet and naive enough to let them get away with it, meaning other Christians in office are just carrying out the law instead of adhering to their conscience. So I think he's challenging us in appropriate ways.
Yeah. And what you guys have highlighted are the things that I believe are very compelling of what he says. But here's sort of where I have challenge, pushback. I think what Wilson is calling us to is actually a really good thing in certain instances, and I think this is what Dreher's getting at as well. This just isn't that time to do what Wilson is calling us to do. And so I think that's where I agree.
When would that time be?
Well, so here something he brings up, quoting Calvin, he talks about the example of Daniel and Daniel's disobedience to the king. Well, what's different between Daniel and Kim Davis is Daniel had no option in the sense that he had to do this, where Kim Davis could quit. She could resign. She was not forced to authorize these marriages, where Daniel had no option. He was forced to. And so there's a sense where if Christians are forced and they have no other recourse, then absolutely this is what we're called to do. But if there is other recourse, I think then we have to ask ourselves, is, as Dreher said, is this a hill to die on? And I just don't know. I to me, this is one of those things where I don't know if pushing back in this way, in this particular instance, is ultimately going to be helpful. Because look at already what has happened. As Dreher points out, is this sort of what we want to hold up as Christians, is kind of here's our moment of, yeah, we're going to assert religious liberty. And so now we have this picture of her coming out of jail with the Eye of the Tiger playing, Mike Huckabee going on a rant. And that's sort of what is, okay, Christians, this is what you mean by fighting for religious liberty. So that's one issue that I have, is I just don't know if in this particular instance, this is the necessary action. All because right. There are other things
Let me push back.
You can do.
Let me push back. I'm going to argue this is not an issue of religious liberty. This is an issue of moral truth or untruth. So every Christian, I think, that writes on this wants to say, well, there's freedom of conscience here. There's freedom of conscience here. What I like that Wilson is doing is saying, no. This isn't about do Christians have freedom of conscience. So the question of what marriage is, I think, is a an objective truth question, not a question of, are Christians free to have a different conviction about what marriage is? Of course we are. And if we ever, I'm with you, Chris, if we ever get to the place where we're forced not to be, then I think we're in a clear place of civil disobedience. But I think Wilson's point is, no, we're not talking here about an issue of religious liberty. We're talking about defining what marriage is. And objectively, if marriage is not between a man and a man or a woman and a woman, then a Christian has a responsibility not just to sort of politely step aside so that the state can enforce its new definition of marriage, but to actively resist and force the question back into front and center.
So this raises another question then. So is it okay for Christians not to follow the law in a situation where they're not being forced, but just they disagree with the law, and so now I'm going to proactively break the law and resist the government? Does this violate Romans 13? That's another question that I have. There's a difference between being forced and proactively breaking the law when I don't have to. So that's another piece of this where even all the examples that Wilson brings up, and he starts talking about Jefferson and sort of Jefferson's view of resisting the government, all of those instances are where there's a force. The colonies had to pay taxes. There was no other recourse. There was no other choice. So I guess,
could have paid taxes.
What's that?
They could have just paid taxes.
There's
nothing biblical about not.
Right. And so
there's a less of a moral conviction there than there is in this scenario.
Right. So
and we went to war and revolted against the king.
Right. And so we're getting into what constitutes this. But I guess my point is the situation of being forced into something and just proactively choosing to break the law when you don't have to.
I like it. I like the back and forth here. I'm concerned about a broader cultural question that I like Wilson being firm on this because of this. My conversations with Christians since the Supreme Court's decision have been entirely discouraging because I don't think Christians know how to have conviction about anything. And I think everybody's tired of sort of the culture war and we don't want to go back to the 1980s and kind of the polarized nature of Christians' relationship to culture. Everybody's trying to figure out how do we engage culture. I think what's happening in that is everybody's just like, well, I mean, what can we do? The Supreme Court said so. So there's just no one's
so
like, no, that's wrong. That's morally objectionable. And therefore, let's do something about it. And so I just like that Wilson's saying, hey, here's a lady who's doing something about it. You might not think she's the poster child for the movement. You might not want to. She's not the next Martin Luther King Jr., right? She's not the articulate, savvy, winsome leader. But don't get mad at her for doing what I think Christians should be doing in this situation.
So what if a Muslim decides to do the same thing? Or what if someone who doesn't share our view of marriage or morality, someone else kind of uses the same argument, claims the same kind of things, I'm disobeying the law because of my conscience. And so the pluralistic aspect comes into this because mm-hmm. we aren't all working with the same assumption.
Correct.
Right, but if you elected them into office, then...
Then you
have to adhere, right?
Well, and this is what's funny is like there's whole countries in the world that operate under Sharia law, right? Where you can't dress as a woman in public without a hijab. And countries work this way. Why? Because there are Muslims in power and they're governing according to their convictions. Now, I'm glad America is, in some ways, I'm glad that it's pluralistic. But I think this is where our sort of experiment with democracy makes us blind to the fact that I think Christians, especially in America, are so like, well, it's pluralistic and we got to make space for everybody and room for everybody, that we don't ever ask the question, well, when would we want to draw a line there and say, no, that's not okay. So the funny thing is if there's a Muslim in a similar office and they want to enforce a conviction they have about marriage, I would expect, well, why wouldn't I expect them to do that? I know that's their view on marriage, right? So like Dusty said, I would probably vote them out of office or vote against them. Or, you know, the answer isn't, hey, would you just step aside so that somebody who has a different worldview can do your job for you? The answer is, let's let worldviews have the robustness that they do, and let's argue about how we should live in society in light of those worldviews.
So should Christians be pushing for an overt conforming to biblical norms in the law, in society? Should we be pushing to make our culture more Christian?
Interesting question. because you assume that there's some sort of neutral space in the public square that's not Christian or Muslim or atheist, but just baseline.
No, I mean, not necessarily. I guess what I'm hearing in Wilson's argument is by protesting this law, by refusing to carry out her job, she's pushing for a change. And so in some of even Wilson's theology, the way he talks about conforming law to biblical norms, and I think he's right, there is no neutral space, but...
Well, if there's no neutral space, then who decides what the sort of public morality should be? I'm just saying, you're asking the wrong question that every Christian I've talked to is asking, which is like, well, are you saying you want everybody to be a Christian? I'm saying everybody is working from a version of morality, whether you want to admit it or not.
No, but this opens up questions of how the church is going to engage the culture. And what. So as a Christian, should I think of one of my duties is I need to make this nation more Christian?
No, not necessarily more Christian, but more in line with objective truth and reality.
But... is objective truth and reality Christian truth? I mean, how can we separate those two? We define our objective truth and morality. We say objective truth and morality is biblical truth.
Sure, but Thomas Jefferson was a deist, and we hail him as a founding father and appreciate and respect the public space he carved out for us in his work as a founding father because he was working from a reality, an understanding of objective truth. So I think in a society, the question is not, can there be space for disagreement and debate? The question is, when we start acting as though there is not objective truth, now we're in a space where no one actually can live as though there's not objective truth, right? So in other words, the question is not, can Christians impose our view of marriage? The question is, what's the objective truth about marriage? If it's objectively true that marriage is between a man and a woman, then we should fight for that objective truth. And the other side is not saying... we want to carve out space for a different view of marriage. They're saying it's objectively true that marriage should not be between a man and a woman, but any two people who love one another. That's the whole point of Ryan Anderson's book, is these are two competing views of what marriage is. So in my mind, the question of, we're not asking the question, should Christians push the culture to try to be more Christian? We're asking, how do we work and live in line with what is true? And then underneath the reality of what is true, leave appropriate space for a pluralistic society. I think there is middle ground between theocracy and anarchy, I guess is what I'm saying.
And I agree. I don't know. I guess I have a hard time. So using Jefferson as an example, Jefferson was a deist, but the assumptions he was operating under were largely Christian because it was such a predominantly Christian culture. And so he was making assumptions, and he had a baseline that he was starting from. Whether he understood why he was doing that or not, that just aren't in place anymore. And so for us to start arguing for what you're saying, objective truth, which I completely agree with you, I just don't know if in our society that works anymore. We have to come from a, I think, even more blatantly partisan position, because just this kind of general vague objective truth, nobody's there anymore. It's my truth, your truth. And so, hey, I'm arguing from a Christian perspective. I'm arguing from a non-Christian perspective. That kind of middle ground, I don't know. I just don't know if it's there anymore.
Right. And I'm saying it's not there. And that's where I like where Wilson's pushing the argument to say, well, if a non-Christian or an atheist or an agnostic would say, you're right, I believe there's objective truth, and I think it's the opposite of what you think, I'd be happy with that. Because then I feel like now we're having a conversation about what actually matters, instead of Christians being put in the category of, oh, you guys just want to enforce your morality on the rest of us, which assumes this reality of some neutral public square where everyone operates on the same set of assumptions. That space does not exist and never has. And the idea that it exists is a fiction and a figment of someone's imagination. I guess to say it another way, even Dreher's thing, Dreher's saying this isn't the hill we should die on, he's still saying there's going to come a line in the sand that we do have to die on. And so Christians are going to be seen the same way either way. It's not a question of, are we going to be seen as the backwards, intolerant culture warriors or the backwards, intolerant culture warriors? I'm like, well, we're going to be cast into that corner regardless. And I like what Wilson's saying, which is, so if that's how they're going to paint us anyway, let's actually fight for stuff that matters instead of just saying, well, we're only going to fight to protect the turf that we already own, which is churches, schools, hospitals, and synagogues, and, you know, whatever the institutions that we officially control are. That seems to me to be not a bad decision. We definitely have to fight for that ground. I think in other words, I definitely agree with Dreher, and I think I also agree with Wilson. I think Dreher's is a more limited view of what our responsibility is, and Wilson's a little broader view of what Christian's responsibility is.
Yeah, I like what he's saying, because he's saying, let's not be belligerent, because there are battles we need to fight for sure. But I do like what Wilson's saying is like, hey, Kim Davis is an unsung hero. You can either impeach her or let her hold to her conscience, which is what I like Wilson to say. I like that, Chris. I like it.
Well, what's the end game, though? What is the
end game is they either impeach her or she quits. But Wilson's saying if she quits, she just takes her ball and goes home, which is what a bunch of other Christians have done.
Yeah. There are pieces of what Wilson is saying that I like, and I'm attracted to that kind of, I am going to act along the lines of my conscience, and you're going to have to stop me. You're going to have to throw me in jail. You're going to have to impeach me. But thinking long-term, and I think this, again, going back to what Dreher's saying, we need to think strategically about what we're doing in the culture. And I think he's written and kind of quoted certain people related to how conservatives and conservative Christians just have a really horrible long-term view of where we're going and what we're trying to accomplish. And so this example with Kim Davis, while there may be pieces of it that are good and helpful to force the issue, in the long run, this isn't going to get us anywhere. And so if what Wilson is calling us to is to push towards a more Christian, or a conformity to more Christian norms in the law, okay. But that's an entirely different conversation. What is that going to look like? Is it just a bunch of people like rebelling, or do we have a bigger sort of strategy of what this is going to look like? If it's just going to be these kind of one-off rebellions, then that's not going to get us anywhere.
You feel like this whole Kim Davis thing is a one-off rebellion?
I just don't know if it gets us anywhere. I just don't know if it's if there's any sort of benefit to what she is doing at this point.
Yeah, I like it. You're kind of winning me over here, Chris, as you talk, because the idea of, so I think it's easy to see it as Wilson's being more principled, Dreher's being more pragmatic.
It's
an interesting pragmatism, because he is saying, hey, this is we need to take a long-term view. And a long-term view assumes that we're going to be still having this conversation 40 years from now, the same way we are right now with abortion, right? Like this, the debate over this issue isn't going away. Mm-hmm. So let's build the consensus within Christianity that we need to, by focusing first of all on churches, school, like carving out the religious liberty protections that everybody agrees should exist, and let's sort of take the long view. And that's not a bad kind of pragmatism. Principially, I can see Wilson's point, and I sort of resonate with it as a principled person. But it's not a bad question to ask. Okay, what's the right long term strategy here? What's the long term?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Chris, that one gal in one county making a decision is not going to change the world. But it's at least presenting itself to say, look, here's a Christian who has a conscience, and she's decided. One of the lines that I love in Wilson's article is, it's not a private conscience. Kim Davis is not just keeping herself from sinning. She is preventing Rowan County from sinning. This is part of her job. And so obviously kind of a stark statement, but he's saying, look, as a Christian with a conscience, she's going to keep her whole county from sinning. That's the position she's going to take. Impeach her if you don't like it.
Well, he's building right there on Calvin's doctrine of the lesser magistrate, which is Calvin sees it as, if you are a Christian and you're in public office, your responsibility is to keep the people under you from sinning, regardless of whether they even see it as sin. He's like, you're doing a moral good if you, in a position of power, keep those under you from sin. And so that's exactly what he's
saying. Which I think is just a brilliant position. So to your point, Chris, does it win us a bunch of battles down the road? Maybe not, but it is at least intriguing that the culture has to at least respond to this Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of what Kim Davis has done that I resonate with as well. And I think there is going to come a time where we're going to have to do this. And I think we are going to need to follow her example of having courage and saying, hey, you know what? I'm willing to go to jail. I'm willing to push back to stand for what I believe, to stand for what is objectively true. And so in this sense, I think we can learn from her and say, hey, she's got guts. She's willing to stand for her conviction, and she's willing to really take heat, to follow through with what she believes. And so, I don't want, even though I'm sort of pushing back on certain things, I don't want, to be mistaken where I completely give mad props to her courage.
In as you read Dreher's article, he makes an interesting point, which is that if you dial back the clock in the pro-life movement, okay, so Roe versus Wade is put into place in 1973. In the late 70s and all through the 80s, you had the sort of aggressive pro-life movement where it was like sit-ins at abortion clinics. It was people being willing to get thrown in jail. It was sort of that civil disobedience style of engagement. And that became very polarizing and didn't necessarily help the debate. Then what happened is you had the development of 4D ultrasound, and the pro-life movement sort of got a lot smarter and said, hey, instead of like trying to prevent women from going in to get abortions by, you know, making a human chain around the clinic, what if we work on crisis pregnancy centers, giving them photographs of their babies in the womb to help them see this is a real human being, providing counseling and support services and all that. And once that started to happen, I think what you see now is there is actually beginning to be a shift in public opinion on the issue of abortion, and slowly we're winning ground there. And so it seems like Dreher is saying, we got to take the same approach to marriage because, you know, what, like it or not, whether it's biblically, whether it's objectively true or objectively false, the Supreme Court has enacted homosexual marriage. And so Christians need to be sort of prepared for a long-term battle here and not see every capitulation as a loss. With, you know, it's and his, you know, his whole hill to die on thing is exactly that of like, hey, let's be willing to lose some battles to prepare ourselves for actually the broader long-term strategy that needs to be in place to see the culture change and to see renewal happen, even spiritually speaking, culturally. So where does this conversation leave us, guys? I feel like you kind of won me back over, Chris. I'm back. Man,
what's interesting to me is that Wilson and Dreher, I'd be surprised if they didn't actually agree. So even though Dreher's saying the battle's over, she's fighting a lost war, you know, it's decided, etc., Wilson would probably agree to that at that level. But he's at least giving this woman props and saying, as a county clerk in her, with her conscience in her county, it's not over. She's elected to rule that.
Let me summarize where I stand and see if you guys agree with me. As a result of this conversation, which you guys have been helpful in, I stand with Dreher on the pragmatic side of I think Christians need to take a longer term view here. So I agree this is not the hill to die on. I think Wilson is right that Christian conscience needs to look like fierce convictions that establish themselves in public policy and that we're not ashamed of. So what he says is the end game here is not armed revolution. The end game is simply a refusal to cooperate with their revolution. Make them fire or impeach faithful officials. Once removed, such faithful officials should run for office again with a promise to continue to defy all forms of unrighteous despotism. So what he's saying is, look, if you're going to be a Christian, be a courageous one, be a faithful one, stand on principle, and if you get removed from office or you get fired, that's fine. You know that. So I think I like a both and there. I like what Wilson's, and I think part of why Wilson's message appeals to me is because I don't see Christians with that sort of moral courage right now. I see everybody sort of backing down and caving because everybody feels the pressure from the culture on the gay marriage issue. And so Christians are not living with courage on this. They're sort of half-hearted and tentative and, well, I have a friend and they want to marry their, you know, same-sex lover. And so that makes it really complex and convoluted. So I want to see Christians with a stronger moral courage and with Dreher's wisdom to say, yeah, we live in a pluralistic society, and we have to be wise about how to persuasively and winsomely both establish our convictions and live faithfully and kindly with those who disagree in a society where we do want to value and honor pluralism.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. I can completely concur with the sense of conviction and courage that we need, and I think It's easy when you kind of talk long-term kind of pragmatics, the Dreher side, it's easy to miss that he's actually calling for strong conviction. And yes, so that cannot be missed. And so if we need voices like Doug Wilson to kind of push the issue and say, hey, sometimes we just have to, you know, we have to draw a line in the sand. And even if it's not the most strategically beneficial, but sometimes we just need to assert our convictions and say, hey, we aren't going along with your revolution. But there is a piece too that, and one of Dreher's articles, he quotes this, the strategist, political strategist, which I'm not a fan of most political strategists, but he brings up the fact that in the civil rights movement, optics was huge. And so Rosa Parks was selected because of the optics. There were hundreds of other examples, some even more compelling than hers, but because of the way that she went about it and the optics of it, that was very compelling to people. And so I think even the way we think through our rebellion, if that is what we're going to do, we need to be doing it much more thoughtfully. We don't need Eye of the Tiger and Mike Huckabee, you know, crying about things. We need, in some ways, to be more like Rosa Parks. So I'll leave it at that.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join us next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.